Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Armchair Detectives Wanted. This is our special interest week, a case from the USA. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Before we start, I will just issue a warning. This podcast may include content that some could find upsetting. It may also contain offensive language. As with all these cases, they are real life events, so please be aware that the crimes have had an impact on the family and friends of the victim. This week's episode is about Velma Barfield. She was sentenced to death row and executed on the 11th of February 1984 by lethal injection. She was convicted of one murder, but later went on to confess to a further three.
Velma was born Velma Bullard on the 27th of October 1932 in South Carolina. Her parents were Murphy and Lily Bullard. She had eight siblings. Velma was the second oldest child, but the oldest female. She lived on her father's farm in Wade. Their home was extremely basic. It did not have electricity, running water, or toilet facilities. Velma feared her father, who was physically abusive to her mother. He would often go on drinking binges, which increased his violent temper. Velma would have to sleep in her parents' bedroom. While at school, teachers said she worked hard and achieved decent grades. As the oldest girl, Velma was given the majority of household chores. On occasions, her father would not allow her to go to school, stating she had to stay at home and complete her duties. Velma recollects that one of her happiest childhood memories is when her father bought her a pink ruffled gown. At about the age of 13, Velma and her family move to Robeson County. She recalls that her father would keep her off school. He would regularly rape her. While at school, she was chosen for the basketball team. Her parents would not allow her to play, stating her chores are more important. This understandably annoyed Velma. At the age of 16, Velma started attending a Baptist church where she was baptised. It is at this time she begins to date Thomas Burke. She had to wait until she was 16 to get the permission of her father to date Thomas. While Thomas and Velma were at the local cinema, he proposed to her. She was just 17. Velma accepted this proposal immediately. Velma and Thomas made their way to Dillon, South Carolina to be married. They both moved in with his parents and Thomas quit school to start a job at a textile company. In 1951, at birth age 19, they moved to Wade, which was closer to her parents. Thomas got a job with a local drinks company. On the 12th of October 1951, they had their first child, Ronnie. The family then moved to Parkton and rented a home where they lived for the next 11 years. Just 2 years after the birth of their son, Velma gave birth to their daughter, Kim. Velma and the children regularly attended church. In fact, Velma even enjoyed teaching at Sunday school.
In 1955, Velma suffered a trauma in her life. While out walking, she was hit by a drunk driver. She was taken to hospital by ambulance. Velma was detained for a few weeks while she began her recovery. Following her treatment, she was eventually able to return to work at the textile mill. However, after such a traumatic experience, she began to suffer with depression. In 1962, 7 years after the road traffic collision, she began to hemorrhage, which caused her doctor to perform an emergency hysterectomy. This would have been an extremely difficult situation for Velma to deal with. She stated after the operation she constantly felt nervous and afraid. This was the beginning of her anxiety. It's also about this time that her husband, Thomas, began to start drinking heavily. His drinking started to impact on his personality and behaviour. He often became violent toward Velma while intoxicated. The police were called to a number of their domestic disputes. It got to a point where Velma requested Thomas attend hospital for his alcoholism. He was detained in hospital for 3 days, but on his return home, he expressed to Velma how he was angry with her. He said she had embarrassed him. Despite hospitalisation, Thomas's excessive drinking continued, and it was not long before he lost his job. This was through drinking and failing to attend work. In order to keep a roof above her family's head, Velma started working two jobs. She worked as a clerk in a department store and as a machine operator at a cotton mill. Due to Thomas's drinking, the couple's marital problems continued. During one incident, Thomas pinned their 17-year-old son up against the wall while holding a knife to him. Understandably, this caused Velma even more stress and anxiety. The problems had now escalated to such a point that their son had become involved. In November 1968, Velma eventually collapsed in the kitchen and suffered a nervous breakdown. She was transported to hospital, where she was prescribed tranquilizers. This appeared to help Velma's anxiety and depression to some extent. However, after a while she began consuming more tranquilizers than those prescribed by her doctor. In order to self-medicate, Velma began visiting different doctors in order to obtain multiple prescriptions. Velma eventually became addicted to tranquilizers. She was now taking three times her prescribed daily dose. On the 4th of April 1969, Velma and Thomas had an argument. During the argument that evening, Thomas passed out. Due to the amount of alcohol he had consumed, Velma and the children left the premises, leaving Thomas behind. It is believed Thomas dropped a cigarette and a fire caught hold at the address. On their return, they found him dead. His cause of death was the result of smoke inhalation.
Less than a year later, Velma was introduced to Jennings Barfield. He was the brother of one of her co-workers at the department store. They entered into a relationship on the 23rd of August 1970. Within a year of her first husband's death, Velma and Jennings were married. At the time, Jennings was suffering from diabetes and emphysema, so Velma now became his primary carer. Within a few months, Velma was admitted to hospital on two occasions. The first was in November 1970, and the second, February 1971. She was admitted to hospital suffering from overdoses of prescription medication. These overdoses were self-inflicted. Jennings, her husband, started to tell people he now regretted marrying someone that was a habitual drug addict. On the 22nd of March 1971, about a year after they were married, Velma set out on a path that would ultimately lead to her execution. Velma started to poison Jennings with arsenic. He began to suffer vomiting and diarrhea. Velma said she just wanted to make him feel sick. However, he died. Unfortunately for further victims, the cause of death at this time was given as heart failure. Shortly after this, in October 1971, Velma was hospitalised again for 3 weeks due to her addiction. After that, she was fired from her employment. It was about this time Velma also lost her home due to non-payment of the mortgage. She was forced to live with her parents. Not long after, Velma had returned home, her father died of lung cancer. Whilst living at home, the cycle of hospitalisation due to tranquilizer medication continued with short periods of recovery in between. In October 1974, Velma applied for a $1,000 loan in her mother's name. She used her mother's home as security for the loan. Velma then forged her mother's signature. This seemed successful, so a month later, Velma took out a loan for a further $1,000. 2 months later, in December 1974, things took a turn for the worse. Velma issued 5 checks from the closed account of her dead husband Jennings Barfield. In the same month, Lily Bullard, the mother of Velma, received an overdue notice for the loans. Lily was obviously unaware of these loans. Within a week of the notice arriving, Velma had purchased a bottle of poison. It was arsenic. Velma began poisoning her own mother. Lily began to complain of cramping, vomiting, and diarrhea. So Velma decided to contact the doctor who prescribed the medication. However, as night falls, Velma's mother was unable to walk. Velma called the doctor again and an emergency ambulance is dispatched. Velma attends the hospital with her mother. By the 30th of December 1974, Lily Bullard is dead. Again, just like her previous husband Jennings, the cause of death for her mother was a heart attack. At that time, there wasn't any evidence of poisoning.
After the death of her mother, Velma decided to live with her daughter Kim and Kim's husband. As the debt from the loans was still unpaid, law enforcement visited Velma, advising that payment needed to be made. This included the debt from the 5 cheques she had issued from her husband's deceased account. The police advised if she failed to make payment, an arrest warrant would be issued. Velma immediately realises she can't pay. She decides to go to her son's address and attempted an overdose on prescription medication. This is a failed suicide attempt, and Velma is yet again admitted to hospital. Undeterred, law enforcement visited Velma and advised she will be arrested on release from hospital. Once it was deemed she was stable enough to be discharged, Velma was arrested and placed before a court. Velma pleaded guilty to fraud and is sentenced to 6 months in the Correctional Centre for Women in Raleigh. However, due to her good behaviour, she served just 4 months. On release from prison, Velma continued her fraudulent and criminal behaviour. She stole a cheque belonging to her daughter's husband to purchase even more drugs. Her daughter Kim could see what was happening to her mother. As a result, Kim contacted the doctor and requested they cease prescribing Velma further medication. In November 1975, Velma was hired as a living carer for 93-year-old Montgomery Edwards. His wife Dolly was 83 and no longer able to care for him. Montgomery was blind and housebound. Velma accepted $75 per week, which included a room and board. It wasn't long though before Velma began to resent Dolly. She thought Dolly was bombastic and critical of her. On the 29th of January 1977, 2 years after Velma had begun caring for him, Montgomery Edwards died, aged 95. Within 2 months of her husband's death, Dolly Edwards also died. It would later transpire she had also been poisoned by Velma. A few months after murdering Dolly, Velma became the carer for the elderly couple John Henry Lee and Record Lee for $50 per week. It wasn't long before Velma stole a cheque belonging to John Henry Lee. She cashed the cheque for $50. Fearing that he would find out, she begins to poison him. Yet again, it isn't long before he is racked with excruciating pain and dies in hospital. As with all other autopsies, John's cause of death was heart disease. After this, Velma decided to quit her job with Record Lee and move to Lumberton, where she became a nurse's aide at a local nursing home. It is at this point she started a relationship with a man called Stuart Taylor, who was an alcoholic. He is also the nephew of Dolly and Montgomery Edwards, the couple she had cared for previously. Yet again, it isn't long before Velma had stolen 2 cheques belonging to Stuart. She cashed the cheques after forging his signature. Realising that Stuart would eventually find out about the forged cheques, she purchased further quantities of poison. Stuart soon begins to feel ill. He suffered the usual symptoms of severe stomach pain and diarrhoea. After he had been suffering for 3 days, Velma called for the ambulance. On the 3rd of February 1978, Stuart was pronounced dead. An autopsy is arranged and finally the cause of death was identified as arsenic poisoning.
On the 10th of March 1978, a month after Stuart had been murdered, Velma was arrested and questioned about his death. A few days later, she again tried to commit suicide. Her attempt failed as her son intervened. On the 13th of March, 3 days after her arrest, Velma confessed to the murder of Stuart. She is sent to Dorothea Dix State Hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. She remained at the hospital for 5 weeks while her mental capacity to stand trial was determined. On the 23rd of November 1978, that same year, her trial began. She confessed to the murder of Stuart Taylor, her mother Lily, Dolly Edwards and John Henry Lee. She never admitted to the murder of Jennings. The jury agreed it was first-degree murder and the death penalty was handed down. Her attorneys continued to appeal the death penalty, stating she was insane. This, though, was unsuccessful. Velma was executed at North Carolina's Central Prison on the 11th of February 1984, 6 years after her conviction. 8 law enforcement officers sat at the front of the room with the large glass fume window behind them. There were 16 witnesses present, which included James Little, her attorney Anne Lott, daughter of evangelist Billy Graham. There was silence in the room apart from the gentle whir of the air conditioning. Only the scrape of a chair was heard as the witnesses moved in their seats. At 1:48 a.m, the bolt on the door opened and Velma could be seen lying on a hospital gurney. She glanced quickly at the room and then turned her head away from the chamber and witnesses. She was covered by a green gown, leaving only her head exposed. As she was wheeled in, her breathing was rapid and shallow. She swallowed deeply and her eyes fluttered behind the glass. She was then positioned in front of the window. Two plastic curtains were positioned to separate her from the large wooden chair that is used for executions by cyanide gas. Three executioners then took up their position. Velma began breathing more heavily and wet her lips. Over the next few minutes, her breathing became deep and regular. At 1:58 a.m, Warden Nathan Rice stated he would make a phone call and then the execution would begin. A minute later, three intravenous saline solution bottles stopped dripping. This indicated that sodium thiopental was entering both arms to place her in a deep sleep. She began to talk and her tongue continued to wet her lips. Over the next 10 minutes, her body started to relax. Her complexion changed from rosy to grey. She was then pronounced dead. Prior to her death, she wrote letters to the family of the victims asking for forgiveness. The letters were then given to Rev Hunt to pass on to the families. The relatives, though, refused to accept them. She released a statement before the execution. "I know that everybody has gone through a lot of pain, all the families connected, and I am sorry, and I want to thank everybody who has been supporting me all these 6 years." Barfield chose as her last meal cheese doodles and Coca-Cola.
So, armchair detectives, what do you think? Was she bad or was she mad? Was she failed by the system? Did she receive the medical care she needed? Did the doctors fail her by prescribing medication without any thought? Did her family know what was happening? Was Velma traumatised in her early life which caused her to act in this way? Did the doctors completing the autopsies fail in their duty? Could further murders have been stopped if a thorough autopsy had taken place? How do you purchase arsenic without coming to the attention of the authorities? Did law enforcement complete thorough investigations? Did she deserve the death penalty? Would you have voted for her to receive the death penalty? Was there any prospect of rehabilitation? What is your view on the death penalty? Please visit our Facebook page, Armchair Detectives Wanted, where you will be able to discuss your theories and views with other members. Don't forget, go to www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com where you will find photos and further information about the case.
Week 11 of our scenario. The examination of the murder scene has revealed fingerprints on the knife. It is established that the knife is from the kitchen drawer. There are fingerprints on the broken glass and lamp. There is blood on the kitchen sink. There are hairs on the deceased clothing. How would you prioritise your actions? A. Fingerprint analysis. B. Hair analysis. C. Blood analysis. D. Fibre analysis. E. Examination of the husband's car. Thank you for listening to Armchair Detectives Wanted. You are one of the team. Remember, don't just listen, be involved. We would really appreciate you recommending our podcast to others. We look forward to you joining us next week for episode 12, A Broken Porch Light.